Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Our guests today have thumbs, and they're green. Terrifying to look at, but very effective. It's gardening today. We welcome Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isler Riggs of the Berry Patch. So if you have a conundrum about something going on in the old garden, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show, so call early. You can email voxpop@wamc.org if you want to, but you can always call. It's a call-in show. 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, Dale, Isla, and Greg. Yeah, it's gardening. We'll see you after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back the Green Thumb crew. Dale Isla Riggs is owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. Greg Ward is from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Mass. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. You have a gardening question? Yeah, it gets crowded. So there are a few open lines right now. Try to get in line, and we'll get to everybody first come, first served. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners.
Hey, hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
How are we doing? Fred, what's happening, man?
You know, we're gearing up for a plant sale, right? It's we're really excited about it. It's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
It's at the Landis.
At the Landis Arboretum. We have a lot of different kinds of trees, shrubs, perennials, tons of veggie starts for your garden. We have annuals. We have perennials. We have an incredible bake sale, a used book sale. No charge to come to the plant sale. Parking's free as well. You know, and you don't have to buy anything. Of course, we would encourage you to.
You should make people buy stuff.
You know, we should.
Don't, and, you know, can't leave until you buy something.
Not too many people, I would say, visit the sale and not leave with something.
Right.
We have something for everyone, and all kinds of native plants. We have tons of pollinator plants. We're really excited. So
good.
Visit our website, landisarboretum.org, for more info.
It's got to be so much fun setting that up.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a good crew, though. It's a good team. It's like, you know, there's no I in team, and we wouldn't be able to do it without a great number of volunteers and dedicated staff out there. So shout out to the whole crew, and we pull it off every year, and we somehow make it look actually kind of easy.
And it's landisarboretum.org.
.org, right? Yep.
Right. Dale Isla Riggs, is the Berry Patch open yet?
The Berry Patch is open on the honor system. We've got lots of tomato plants out front and some other veggies and a lot of beautiful herbs.
Yeah.
If you go to our Facebook page, we have the 14 days of tomato transplanting season.
What is that?
Well, you know, there's the 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's prime tomato planting season now. And I'm highlighting two varieties of tomatoes every day for the next 14 days.
Well, it's exciting.
Because we have 28 varieties of tomatoes available.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. And the honor system's working out for you?
Yeah, so far we have a few more cameras out this year.
Aha!
And we have a few more alerts turned on for when we know that there's people out there. So
it's the Ronald Reagan trust but verify.
Exactly.
Aha.
And you're more likely to find us when we hear that somebody has come up, we'll come out from the greenhouse.
Yeah. Do you ever run out of there with a shotgun? What are you doing?
Not so far.
No?
We'll hope it doesn't get to that.
You know who loves the honor system is the guys from the commercial nurseries. Greg, how's the honor system working out over at Ward's?
It's very good.
Yes.
Yeah. We just verify.
Right. It's usually a credit card verification,
yes,
yeah?
Right.
So what's happening over there, man?
Well, we are having our anniversary weekend celebration.
How many years?
I was saving that till the end.
Oh, all right. Continue. Okay. Continue.
Wait a minute. No,
I'll just stop. I'm the host. You just go on. It's fine.
Anyway, especially on Saturday, it's a weekend thing. There's, of course, lots of specials. Can I say the word specials at Ward's Nursery?
Oh, geez, you said it thrice. So okay. Sure, why not?
And so anyway, between 10 and 1, we do really fun things. We've been doing it for several years. We do this spinning wheel. It's kind of like, what's the game with Vanna White?
Wheel of Fortune.
It's kind of like that.
That's funny you thought of that. I thought of Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, okay.
What goes up must come down.
And I was thinking of that money wheel you see at a casino.
Ah, so okay, yeah, let's talk.
So there's lots of prizes. You spin the wheel, and it's you just come to the store, and you get to spin the wheel, and then you hopefully will win something. There's also lots of experts. Now, I do include myself in that.
Of course.
But lots of people will have extra help to answer all sorts of questions from perennials to vegetables to starts to trees and shrubs to annuals, everything you can think of. It has been 68 years.
68 years?
This is 68 years. And
you don't look that old. You got to be 90, right?
I haven't been there quite that long.
Okay.
But we're trying to catch Bob.
Really? In age?
That's in number of years that Ward's Nursery has existed compared to Fatigan's.
Really? Okay, so you're a newcomer then, by comparison.
Because Bob's about to tell you that we're not even close.
Wow, because, I mean, Fatigan's has been there, legendarily, it's been there since medieval times, right?
205 years.
200 and no, no. Kid, no, really.
105 years.
That's amazing.
105 years. Wow. 1920.
Yeah, we got 74, this will be our 74th years of plant sales at Landis Harbor.
Is it, right?
Next year is our Diamond Jubilee, 75 years of Landis.
What about you, Dale Isla?
We are at 25.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, go ahead, Bob. Is there anything else over there?
It's just peak season. I mean, we are loaded to the gills, stocked up, ready to go. Now's the time if you're looking for stuff. You know, don't wait because it might be gone.
Okay.
That's a great question. I know. So Dale said it's time to plant tomatoes.
It's time.
We're always sort of hedging our bets and wondering a little bit, is it warm enough? Well, this year, the weather has been in our favor for that.
It has.
The soils are warm. The forecast looks really good. I'd say you're right. Just go for it.
Go for it.
Yep.
This is actually the average last frost in this area is about now, and we haven't had one in 3-4 weeks.
No, it's been a spectacular bloom season. Nothing really got hit at all. Yeah. From magnolias to red buds, it's looked fantastic out there. Yeah.
We had 32.7 last Monday morning.
Yeah. Did you really?
We were a little higher than that, 35, 36.
And we got 38.
We were higher than that. We were like 40. Yeah.
There's a lot of numbers on this show. Let's just do some emails here. I think I made a mistake about 30 years ago, says Phil, when my young children and I built an arbor at the entrance to our garden and planted two trumpet vines, one on each side. I'm getting tired of digging them out of the garden all summer, now at least 25 feet away from the originals. Considering herbicides in the garden, hummingbirds love the mature plants. What's an older garden and bird lover to do?
You know, it's a common one that we hear of. Trumpet vine does sometimes a little too good. It is a nice plant.
It's funny how if you get a trumpet vine and you put a tiny one in the ground, it doesn't live above ground for the first couple of years. Like, it will die back, and often people are saying, "I think my trumpet vine is dead," but it's not. It's just waiting down there below the soil.
And it's kind of building root systems.
Well, eventually, it does take off and. You know, I had one on the house that we've been living in for 40 years, 39 years, and it was all over the house, and it was not working out, so I took it down, and it was coming up pretty regularly for all of those years, and it's still here and there, but basically I've defeated it, and that is by, just as Fred is always saying, just dig down a bit. If you can get as much root as possible, cut it off and wait till it sprouts again and do it again.
Yeah, but you're a bird lover. Wouldn't you want to keep them?
Well, I have other plants instead, but they are there. I mean, I would keep, if I had it in an arbor that was away from the house, I would keep it there. Just prune that one back so that it's under control. It's those ones that are sprouting 20 feet away that you want to
control.
All right. Yeah. This one's from Candida in Bolton Landing, New York. We have a field of wild blueberries, only they've not been producing these last few years. What's the best fertilizer for them? Dale Isla, I'll give that one to you.
Yeah, so blueberries, wild blueberries usually get enough from the native soil, but if they're not being as productive as they would like, just get out there with some urea. It needs to be an ammonium-based fertilizer.
Urea, that's, all right, I'm not going to leave it.
4600, speaking of numbers. You can get it at
4600.
Yep, that's the balance of nutrients. So it's 46% nitrogen, 0 phosphorus, 0 potassium.
I see.
Or ammonium nitrate would be fine, but blueberries need an ammonium source of nitrogen versus a nitrate source of nitrogen.
All right, this one's from Ellen in Troy. Ellen of Troy. I found a head of garlic at the back of the pantry, which has sprouted. The head is intact. All the cloves have a nice bright green sprout, about 2 to 3 inches long. The cloves are too dried out and spent to cook with. So here are my questions. One, can I plant these to grow more garlic to eat? If so, what do I do?
So you can just put them in the ground.
Yeah.
You definitely get something out of them. Are you going to get a big bulb? No. Are you going to get garlic scapes in the middle of summer and make some great pesto? Absolutely. And you will get a bulb in the fall, too. So, and you could use them fall bulbs for seed, you know, if they're too small. But otherwise, you know, I'd say plant it.
Okay.
There's no such thing as a too small a clove of garlic.
You know, I can't say that you're wrong on this.
Throw a bunch of them together. And...
Definitely.
I'll tell you.
You're talking to a garlic lover, so you're right again.
Planting them right now. You should separate them all out. Plant them all about a foot apart, a couple inches deep.
Yep.
Water them in really well. Maybe add some nutrients as well, and you'll have something for sure.
Yep.
I tell you what, I was going to do another email, but it's fairly long, and so we'll hold it for later. Zach the engineer, let's cue the music. Let's take a break. Ooh, some blues. 800-348-2551. Gardening. We'll be back. Ronnie Earle, lunch at R&M's here on Vox Pop. It's Gardening Today. Ray Graff with you, along with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll go back to the email bag in a bit, but let's now go to the phones, and we'll go to our friend Carrie in Durham, New York. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, Ray, long time no talk to you. It's been, what, 2 days?
Oh, my gosh. This is Carrie O'Loughlin from Pets and Vets. Yes, you were on with Greg.
Yeah, and... I know you, Carrie.
Yeah, so what's up?
So since I was there, I wish I had seen this before I saw Greg, my red bud has done nothing. It didn't flower. There are no leaf buds. I just went out and scratched, a stem, and it's green. So I'm assuming it just got frozen or something this spring, and hopefully it'll re-leaf out.
Yeah, if it's still green, there is some, small percent of chance. It is pretty late, though. It really should be sprouting. It may end up sprouting lower than it originally is. You know, some of the top may be dry.
I would be worried this point.
Yeah. It's not great that it's not leafing out. It's, you could see it missing flowers. Which is not too uncommon, but, it sounds like winter injury. It was good last fall and all last summer.
Yeah, it flowered fantastic last year. It's probably about 10 or 15 years old.
Okay. So probably winter kill.
It's been very healthy.
Yeah, it is a plant that can get hurt in the winter.
They can be marginal. I mean, they've done well in our zone and can do well in our zone for a long period of time. And then just one odd winter. It's
the thing about our winters now, you get a few mild ones and you think, okay, well, it really is milder in the winter, but maybe not.
Right. And after the last few years, this one was a little bit more of a shocker. It did get down to cold.
It was, Isla had 20 below.
You mentioned 20 below.
It's definitely not something you can really do anything for. You have to just wait. We've had enough moisture, obviously, now, so that would have been something we would have suggested. But that just waiting. The only other thing that could have sort of snuck up on it if it wasn't about winter time. So the winter damages the roots. The roots then can't move enough, moisture through them to start to make those buds pop. And so if that's winter damage, especially if the wood is still green. But also you might want to look around for vole damage.
Yeah.
That's always a possibility, especially with the snow we had. And that might be hard to see, but it might not. It'd be little, half-dollar size holes here and there nearby, near the trunk in the soil.
Although with a 15-year-old one, I would think that would be a little bit less likely. Problematic with a vole, that just being that old and how good it did for that long. But like Greg said, I would say you wait and then see where it leaves out from, because it might leaf out lower on the plant. Only some of the top portions may die. And then you can prune back the dead to living parts. And with some pruning, you can correct it and save it. And I've seen that happen a lot of times over the years, too.
All right. Carrie, that good?
If I cut it, yeah. Go, if I cut it all the way back, is there a chance that I'll get new sprouts from the base?
So you don't want to do any cutting until it sprouts.
Correct.
And then yes, you would cut it back to wherever those sprouts are.
But if you cut it back to the base, which means ground level, the odds are you might get a new one to sucker, which could be trained into a tree, but you also might not.
And we have some time. I know we've just talked about planting tomatoes, but usually it can be as late as the first, second week of June, and a plant will start to leaf out. And if that happens, you have a chance.
Yeah. Harry, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Victor in Williamstown. Victor, you're on.
Yeah. I'm wondering about, I got two brand new peach trees from last year, and got a lot of holes in the ground, but I don't think it's affecting the tree too much. I'm going to guess moles. Problem there?
Probably voles if you're actually seeing the hole. The mole is going after grubs, and they generally mound up soil, but no real visible holes. But if you're seeing holes like sort of like the size of like a chipmunk or like maybe a large mouse, then that's most likely voles.
And they're not good.
No, they're not good. They can eat plant roots. I don't think they're going to, wipe out your tree or anything like that. But, that could be voles.
One other question. I just want to know what fertilizer, organic fertilizer, to use with my peach trees.
Yeah. So I always use a product called Plantone. It's just a good overall, balanced fertilizer. Oh. It's got it's organic. It's got a complete fertilizer and including all the micronutrients and even trace elements. So it's a good one.
There's a lot of fertilizers out there that are fine. And what I tell people most of the time is it's important to do something. And a particular one you use sometimes doesn't matter as much as that you did it.
Right.
Yep. And I'd put it down right away, if you haven't, this would be a good time to drop it down.
I'm going
to
do it today. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yep. And if you have voles, you might want to think about putting a collar, maybe a 6-inch collar around those peach trees to protect them from the voles.
Definitely.
Just hardware cloth and give a couple inches because the plant will get bigger. But we lost a couple bush cherries and a witch hazel that was quite large to voles this winter.
A general rule, we do just what Dalila said. We always put vole guards on any young tree, even if it's not a fruit tree. Any young tree gets a hardware cloth vole guard around them, and we bury them down a couple of 3 inches or so around into the mulch, and pin them down sometimes with little tent stakes that can work, or any of those kinds of things. But they are not generally a problem during the growing season. So we usually put them on in the fall, September, and take them off, around now is when we generally do.
And so then just getting back to the holes, if there are a few holes around the tree but next to the trunk, you might want to try to irrigate those holes a little bit to try to close them up so that they're no longer in there, so that you're sort of chasing them out a little
bit.
Good point.
All right, let's go to Joe in New Paltz. Joe, you're on the gardening show. Go.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I'm a member of the community garden in New Paltz, the Gardens for Nutrition. It's been around since 1976. It's right on the Wallkill Riverbanks. And last Saturday, there was about 4 feet of polluted water that flooded the entire garden. So hundreds of gardens were affected. And my question is, how long does it take for vegetable plants and the soil to sort of shed all of the contaminants, fertilizer, manure, whatever is in the river, to be like potentially safe to eat? So like, is it a growing season? Is it a year? Is it a week?
That's a question.
Some of
the
more ambitious gardeners were. Oh, sorry.
I think you want to do some soil testing, and that's how you're going to find out.
Yeah, it really does depend on what pollutant or pollutants have, obviously got into that site. And that's, a hard question to know without knowing what we actually have there. So I think a soil test, would be a good way to go.
I also think if it was just water, there wasn't any silt, from the river that filled in there, then it's probably going to be a reasonable thing, to do.
It may not. Yeah. It may not be Cornell that does that kind of test. It might be an independent lab.
Yeah,
I was going to say that it might be.
But I would talk to your local Cooperative Extension Association because they've got some really good resources based on the food safety aspect. Mm-hmm. Like when vegetable fields flood, mm-hmm. there's. Yeah. You can't sell and shouldn't eat anything that has actually been under floodwaters. But if it's just the plant that's there and then producing after that time, they do have a period of time. Usually it's like 90 days, but there's certain crops that it may only be 30 days. So I would talk to the food safety folks at Cornell.
And that would be true with just the soil as well, if nothing was planted yet.
But yes.
And so then you'd be in this similar situation.
Like one of the food safety things is that you can't harvest anything for 90 days after soil has had manure applied.
Yeah.
That's a whole issue.
Yep. Yeah, I'll be darned. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, boy, we got a stack of email. We'll get to those in a little bit. But right now, let's travel out to Housatonic, and it's Chris's turn. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
Can you plant lemons and limes and Thai peppers?
Thai peppers. That's a new one.
The lemons and limes you can have as a potted plant that you can put outside for the summer in a nice sunny spot, but then bring in from, say, October until about now, till the middle of May. So you can have lemons and limes by keeping them as a container plant. And then Thai peppers, yep, we were just talking about planting tomatoes. Peppers are right behind tomatoes for planting. So sometime at the end of this month or a little sooner, you could plant some Thai peppers right out in the ground.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and that's an annual crop.
Just a word of caution. Thai peppers are very hot, like 50 million ICUs.
Wow.
Okay.
Very hot.
Well, Chris, hey, man, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Gardening Today with Fred and Dale Isla and Greg and Bob and looks like it's Abigail in Kingston. Hello, Abigail. Hello, Abigail. Are you there? Oh, Abigail. Were you perplexed by the lemon and lime and Thai pepper questions? Oh, you're gone. Well, there goes another one. Kathy in Liberty, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hey, I have a question about two different things.
Okay.
One is Joe Pye weed, and the other is milkweed. And I've been trying for years to get them to grow from seeds. And I've ordered milkweed seeds for my area. I want to have butterfly homes.
Wow.
And I just love Joe Pye weed. And my neighbor has a big, beautiful plant, and she's given me seeds from it in the fall. I've tried putting them in the freezer, both seeds, for a time to model after winter. And I've done it, and I've not done it. And I cannot get them to grow. I've tried planting them in the soil. I've tried planting them in pots indoors earlier in the spring, and I'm so frustrated. I used to live in a field of milkweed. There was so much of it, but now I can't even get one little plant to grow.
Greg,
well, we're gonna just double check to see if they do need that stratification. My first thought is probably not, or not much of it anyway. They should be exceptionally easy to germinate, and so it might be the technique you're using to put them. I would certainly use a potting soil, something that's well drained. I would make sure that they're very warm, that the soil temperatures are in the mid to high 60s, so that their soil stays evenly moist. That they hydrate. All of those things are really important to get some kind of seeds to germinate. You're getting the seeds from next door, and you can feel them, right? You separate them, you take the chaff away, and you actually have some seeds in your hand when you do that, and then just making sure that they have complete contact.
You could test them in a paper towel too. You can grab some of those and just put them in a paper towel and see if they would sprout. Now you wouldn't even put them in the soil yet. Just see if they're actually going to sprout. Okay, you got some germination. Now we know or no, nothing's happening. So that's a good way to test, you know, in general. But if you're, those are plants, like both of those plants grow like weeds, you know, they have the weed in the name.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, at the Arboretum, we've, you know, we leave a lot of those kinds of plants for pollinators, including the milkweeds. We some people say, why you leave all that? Well, we leave it for pollinators. But, sometimes we actually have to call it out a little bit just because it's expanding all the time. So, generally, like I said, they're real easy to grow.
Dale Island.
Yeah, and Joe Pieweed does need a cold stratification period of 30 to 60 days, and it needs to be moist while it's in your fridge. So if you're putting them in the fridge, but you don't have them in a moist soil mix, that might be part of the issue as well.
Yep, because the refrigerator is really dry.
They're desiccating, yeah. Drying out.
Yeah, yep. And then when you plant them, make sure that they're staying in moist soil the whole time that you have them, that you're trying to sprout them. And I think Fred's idea of trying to do a germination test with them first, put them in some moist paper towel after you've taken them out of the fridge, put that in a plastic bag on top of your fridge and see what germinates.
And you mentioned freezer. So, but really, what's the temperature we're looking at? Is just
refrigerator temperature.
Yeah, so it doesn't 30, have to freeze.
30s. Yeah,
okay. And that can also be additional desiccation if they're freezing.
All right, Kathy.
One last solution.
Go ahead.
Is just get a piece of that plant from your neighbor.
That's what I was going to say too.
Or somewhere. Yeah. And plant it, and then you can start dividing it after a couple of years.
I've kind of thrown them out and figured they were gone, and they came back.
They grow. they do. So if you can get a little division, you know, a little piece of root, that's all you really need. And you know, you're not going to take any of the other plants away. You're just doing a little small division. They're going to grow easily, and then you're guaranteed. And like Greg said, you know, you can take more divisions off of yours, and it should be pretty easy to start to get them. Once you start to get them growing, they will automatically reproduce. So you'll start to get them because the seeds will drop and they'll do what they need to do for the winter.
It's Gardening Today, and that was Fred Breglia. Also with us today, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isler Riggs. Now, earlier in the show, we went to Abigail in Kingston, and she was gone. There was dead air, which some people say is the best part of my shows. But let's try again with Abigail. Are you there?
You know, you have a terrific sense of humor. I just adore it, really.
Thank
You're
you.
Very good.
Very
What's
kind.
Your name? Anyway.
Cut it out.
I have a wonderful suggestion for listeners. Whenever you cook spaghetti or any kind of vegetable, put the water in a watering can. Or deep water, take the pot in which the vegetables were cooked, or the whatever you're cooking, spaghetti, and take it outside and water. Maybe you don't want to water when it's hot, but you want to water. You want to use that water and put it back in the ground. Oh. Anyway, that's my suggestion. I have two green thumbs and four fingers, regular fingers that are also green.
Well, that's good.
Anyway. Love you guys.
Well, Abigail, thanks. But you want to hang on while they comment on your idea of doing this?
Yeah, I'd love to hang on. I'm all hanging right. in, so why not hang on?
Exactly. And you called twice.
Ahead.
So, all right, what do you think, folks?
I think it's a great idea. I think the most important part is letting the water cool down first.
Yeah.
But you don't want to.
Yeah. Unless you want to kill a couple of animals. Or
that's true.
That's nice, Abigail. Okay, I think we should probably terminate this conversation.
I didn't have the time to terminate. Right. Okay, I'm terminated.
Have
bye-bye.
A good one. 800-348-2551. Everyone's a comedian. Yvonne is in Pittsfield. You're on.
Hi. A few times ago, you talked about oak wilt. And I have a question. I live in the middle of the Berkshires. I have an old tree owner's manual that the Department of Ag and Forest Service, Mass DCR, put out. And at that point, it's an old one. It's like from 2009. It was not yet in the New York, Massachusetts area. So my question is it here?
Oh.
And when the cuts are made, because I had some pruning done last week, and it wouldn't seal the cut because he said he comes back in a month and does it. But if I understand what you said before, it's spread by insects. So can you just go into it a little more and what the right procedure is?
Yeah, so it's actually a fungus.
And if it's even here.
Yeah, it is in New York for sure. It's actually in the capital region, confirmed.
Well, Yvonne's in Massachusetts, in Pittsfield.
Pittsfield.
And I can't say 100%, but it's not something that we're seeing at this
point. Okay.
All right. Yep. So it may or may not be there. In terms of oak wilt, you know, generally we only want to prune that during the dormant season. That's the general rule. So I don't, you know, we don't prune any of our oaks except for winter pruning. And that just, you know, there's a lot less inoculum to infect your plant and a lot less chances of your plant getting oak wilt. And that's a fungus. That's, it's not an insect that's getting it. It's a fungus. And there's a lot of issues with oaks in general. They do really well in most cases, but there's not just one reason why, you know, oh, my oak's declining, it's oak wilt. There's a lot of things that mimic oak wilt, but there's a lot of distinct differences between them. And sometimes just drought, continued drought for oaks has definitely been stressing them. We've had, you know, the spongy moth infestations, not, you know, several years in a row. Those drought-stressed trees definitely are taking harder hits with those spongy moth.
As an arborist, Fred, is there any research as to which types of oaks, reds, pins, whites? It gets them all.
All of them. Yeah.
All of them.
We're seeing some mortality now 2 years after the spongy moths.
Right, exactly.
We saw it during the spongy moth with some trees, especially these trees that were on sort of ledges and things, you know, on the hills. But
where the drought.
But now we're seeing a few quite large, which and well established. You would think the soil would be fine. But they're not. They didn't pop this year.
No, and I think a lot of it is unfortunately drought-related stress. And then when you get spongy moth on top of that. So let me ask you, what does your oak tree look like right now? Does it look good?
I think it looks good. I hope you can hear me. My phone got scratched.
You're okay.
We can still hear you.
Okay. So it looked okay. It just had some lower cuts that needed to be taken down. A truck had backed into it last year and broken. You know, one of the branches was hanging. So it just was just to do some pruning cuts, not because there was any major stuff going wrong
right,
with it.
Okay.
But I just had heard you talk about it, and I'd never heard of oak wilt before your program a few times ago. And so I just didn't know, because I thought you had said that the insects spread the fungus when they land on the cuts. And so I just don't know, like, should I just leave it alone now, not have it sealed? Because I know trees sometimes, like, they heal their own cuts.
Sealing isn't going to do anything for the fungus, is it?
Well, normally you would never seal any pruning cuts because the tree itself will seal them. And any of these products, like wound dressings and stuff, have proven by research through the International Society of Arboriculture, can make it worse. It certainly isn't making it better. But the best of those products actually don't help or hurt. They're kind of just neutral, so they don't actually prevent the sealing. And in cases where you did prune like this, you know, not in the ideal time zone, and you want to be extra safe, if you used a product that didn't hurt or help in terms of closing, it would do something else. It would actually provide a temporary shield to maybe make it less of a problem for infection.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We are way overdue. It's The Gardening Show with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Dale Isla Riggs, and Greg Ward. The number is 800-348-2551. And we'll be back. Check the email bag. My word, that's more Ronnie Earle, twice in one show here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. That's Themby. I think it's a Pharoah Sanders song from way back when. It's Gardening Today. Ray Graff is here. The panel is over there. You're wherever you are. Let's check some emails. Daniel from New Paltz writes, during the last gardening show, I was surprised to hear the panel recommend that a caller aggressively remove wild strawberry plants from what sounded like an informal flower garden. Wild strawberries, a low-maintenance native ground cover with high wildlife and ornamental value. It's also culturally significant for various indigenous nations throughout the Northeast. Let's see. Unless you are growing diminutive, dainty plants or are running a commercial farm like Dale Isla, wild strawberries should be considered a welcomed presence, especially when there are so many pushy non-native plants around that actually deserve our scrutiny. That's from Daniel in New Paltz.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, we did say that last show. We did say that we, you know, it's kind of a good problem.
In certain situations, it's lovely.
It is. Right. It is. But if you have a garden and you're looking for some kind of a manicured look, I guess, you know, any plant in a spot where you don't want it technically is a weed. But, you know, if it was our garden, I think we'd all say, let's encourage it.
And if I remember that person had a garden installed and had gone a year or two and then was noticing that the strawberries were everywhere and didn't want them to be everywhere.
I don't remember this. Was Sarah hosting?
Sarah hosted.
I was out sick. Yeah, that's right.
And so I think we just suggested that they ask their gardener to come back and just work on that.
Correct.
Okay.
But it is a great native pollinator, and we like it.
Wild Strawberry was a very
really
interesting Bergman film. You ever see that film?
No.
Ingmar Bergman?
No. It's a wonderful ground cover.
A little depressing. Could you eat the strawberries?
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
awesome. They taste. If you can beat the birds to them,
it's really hard to get them.
They are hard to get them, but when you find a good patch, boy, they are unbelievably
tasty. I bet the deer
tasty.
Love them, huh?
I think everything eats them.
Okay. You know?
Mice will get them.
Mice.
Yep. Here's one from Peter in Cranford, New Jersey. Starts out, I'm all in on what he was about to say. I hate everything about lawns, says Peter. I hate the fact that my neighbors use fertilizers and chemicals on their grass, and everything washes into the lakes, rivers, and oceans. Is there anything that I can use instead of a lawn that will not have my neighbors signing a petition to have me removed from my home? I'm the only person on my street that does not use a lawn service, and I believe that this marks me as suspect. That's from Peter and Grant for New Jersey.
This is a segue. Strawberries.
Put the wild strawberries on?
Perfect. You don't have to use chemicals and fertilizers.
You definitely
it's
don't.
Not. It's going to grow no matter what. Just mow it, and that's good enough.
Yeah, and we are in No-Mow May, which could turn into No-Mow June.
Of course, this
June.
Year is a little tough because No-Mow May is going to be a hay field in a couple of weeks.
It is. I mean,
with all the rain.
Even if you didn't want a No-Mow May, you're going to get one because it's too hard to get the mowers out.
Well, you can be patchy. You know,
patchy,
you mow some places and you
where you don't get stuck.
Places.
Yeah, mow. Yeah.
Peter, AstroTurf. Just pop it on.
Oh, no, that's dangerous. You don't want that.
Well, you get the new stuff.
Well, you hear what they say about football players and the stuff and the
car. Well, as long as Peter's not rolling around on it, I mean, come on.
I got a friend in Jersey that he believes that's the best plan on the planet. AstroTurf, because it's carefree. I don't agree with this guy.
Grass is the easiest thing to take care of, period.
Yeah. Right. But what we do at DR Arboretum is we just mow everything on the higher side, and it lets a lot of other plants that look like grass, it looks like lawn, I guess you'd say.
That's my trick.
Grow. So if you go too low with some of them, it'll phase them out, and then you have a really unhealthy lawn. But if you mow a little bit high, we don't ever fertilize our lawns. Our grass is, pretty green over here at Landis Arbor.
Always trying to mow high. Claire in Great Barrington says, I have two about 10-foot tall common lilacs. They're about 40 feet apart, get similar sun, and have the same soil conditions. One is blooming profusely. The other has leaked out completely, but has only one bloom. Any thoughts? And that's from Claire in Great Barrington.
If they're big, I'd be trimming them, taking out the older wood, wouldn't you?
Probably. Yeah.
It could be cyclical. I mean, they are
alternate sometimes.
Last year could have been the other way around for sure.
Yeah.
I don't have that many lilacs in my yard. I only have one, I have to say. However, it's really fun. Really, it's called Yankee Doodle. It's one of the newer selections. Very, very prolific. Doesn't, very full looking even during the summer.
Yeah.
And it usually blooms really well every year. But this year it bloomed, but it was definitely not a show stop.
No, and I see it sometimes. It's not as good every year.
A lot of lilacs were weak this spring because they had so many fungal problems on the leaves last year.
I noticed that.
And they just didn't produce the energy. Yeah. So they put out the leaves, but they kind of skipped flowering.
They kind of didn't flower heavy. We have some at our house that had 2 years in a row with that fungal, and it just wiped out all of our leaves. And they're completely green.
In the fall, we got all those calls about, geez, my lilac dead. It's my lilac.
I've driven by some of those hedges that I noticed it, and they actually look great right now.
Yeah, and we've got one of them.
And they even bloomed again, some of them.
So. But ours don't have quite the blooms this year. My wife says it's because I pruned it too late, but that's not a possibility.
The other thing to always think about is, see if the one that isn't doing as well has some vole damage at the bottom. We always forget about look at the base of the plant and see what might be affecting it.
And my mother-in-law up in Lake George area, Hudson Falls area, she has a lilac that has like no flowers on it either. So I told her, just be patient. It's coming.
All right. Let's go to Patty in Glens Falls. Patty, you're on the gardening show.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about service berry.
Okay.
Yeah. I planted a new service berry bush about 5 feet
call that I received from a nursery. It was doing well, and now some of the leaves are kind of orangey reddish. I'm wondering if that could be the rust rot.
So it was planted this. It was planted this year, you said?
Yes. About a month ago.
And was it? And when it came, was it in leaf?
Yes.
With leaves were already on it when they brought it.
Yes.
Yeah. So my first guess then is that the leaves that were on it are just a little stressed from being dug out of the ground and then being at the nursery and then coming to your house. And so they're going to drop off early, but it will put out new leaves, and you know, any minute, and again in June. And you may see some more orange later on.
That's just transplant stress, I guess, particularly in that plant.
Especially if it's a little bit lower on the plant or a little bit more interior rather than on the tips.
It is in the apple family, so later in the season a lot of times they'll get some leaf fungal problems, but not yet.
No, that would be like you would see midsummer. And this would be, if it is rust, it would be an orange spot, which if you let it go long enough and you turn it over – really cool-looking little fungal fingers that grow out of it. You know, under a hand lens, boy, where they're really neat-looking. But that being said, this would be an orange spot.
It's amazing the things that excite him.
Yeah, you know what? He ain't wound too tight, let me tell you. Hey,
I don't know. I'm with Fred. I like looking at this.
Yeah, they're cool. Thank you.
Yeah, Patty, thank you for the call.
I just wouldn't admit it. That's
all. All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. That was Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isler Riggs, and Greg Ward. Let's go to Pittsfield. Jacob, you're on.
Hey, yeah. I remember a gentleman or two that I trusted considering telling me to use milky spores to take care of grubs and voles, and I forget the reasons why, and I would like to hear what you guys have to say.
Okay.
Milky spore is a disease of Japanese beetle grubs and Japanese beetle grubs only. So it doesn't take anything, doesn't do anything for voles. He's talking about moles.
Yep.
And if you get rid of the grubs, sometimes you reduce your mole population. But moles' primary food source is earthworms. So just getting rid of the grubs doesn't necessarily do it. Milky spore does not get rid of all the grubs. There's two other kinds that are common around here. So is it helpful? Maybe. But it's not going to solve your mole problem.
No, but the moles themselves generally don't eat. They're not eating plants, so you know if you can tolerate a little bit of mounds
messy.
Of soil,
just
you
messy.
Just step them back down. We never really complain about moles. Voles are those ones that eat the plants, eat the roots, girdle stems, and those are definitely not making mounds of soil. Those are making holes that look like chipmunk holes or like mouse holes. So, depending on what you've got there, you may or may not even need to treat.
Dale Alley, you want to weigh in on that?
I think these guys covered it perfectly.
Okay, Jacob, thank you, and good luck now. We'll go to Paul, who says he's in Hopog, but I'm skeptical. Are you listening in Long Island, Paul?
Yeah, actually, I just got back.
Really? Okay.
Just took a foggy ferry ride back from Hoosie.
Cool.
My question is to Greg. I got one of those bird feeders that attaches to your phone for Christmas. Of course, the squirrels got a hold of it first and just raised havoc with it. But I bought some sunflower seeds from Ward's nursery that I used in the bird feeder. But I'm also trying to
grow some sunflowers.
Yeah, plant the seeds.
Right. Yeah.
So I bought enough eggs to put them in egg crates, and with some potting soil, but they're not doing well. Do those things germinate, or should I try a different way?
So my suggestion would be not to focus too much on the bird seed source and get a little package of seed source, because you don't really know the complete age of those things. So they may be a little too old.
They really can age out?
All seeds age out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And the other reason to do that is maybe it's just you just want to feed the birds, but the ones that you would get in packages from wherever, they're going to be a little more interesting looking. There's some nice mixes. And so not only will the birds come and feed on the seed heads once they've formed during the summertime, they'll look really fun. They're really, really, nice branching selections that you can get from seed packages.
Go ahead, Paul.
And that's something that's available at Ward's.
It certainly is.
Which is quite a drive from Hop Hog, my friend.
He's coming back to Housatonic, he said.
All right.
So the only thing I would say is
you
could use the egg cartons again and start them, and then you can transplant them as you normally would any seedling. Or because it's nice and warm, you could pick the spots you want to put them and seed them directly now. It's nice and warm.
Put them right in the ground.
Yeah, they would like that.
Beautiful.
And again, the seed package will tell you about depth and spacing a little bit. The only thing I will mention is other things like sunflowers after they've sprouted, so they can, you can get deer brows, et cetera, and that can be unfortunate.
Okay. Yeah, well, and if you are going into a small little egg carton, I will say that although sunflowers are quite easy to grow, they don't like transplanting a lot. So if you take it into a little tiny container and try to put it into a bigger container, you could set that growth back. So I would say either direct sow or put it into the container size that you're planning to put in the ground.
All right, since we talked about birds, we'll do Elisa's email here, or maybe it's Eliza. Yellow-bellied sapsucker attack is the subject heading.
Okay.
One of my trees is being hammered by this bird. Does this indicate the tree is infested by something? Is it the death knell for the tree?
So, no, it doesn't mean death. It's common. It attacks a number of different plants. It makes lots of vascular damage, so it's hitting the – and it's going after little insects, and the insects are basically –
Really, the only way to control that is to put some kind of physical barrier around the trunk.
That's exactly
wire, burlap, paper wrap. You can't repel them. You can't scare them. You got to physically
and they're protected,
them.
So you're not going to hurt them. But the one I've used is actually works real well. Is just household screen, old screen.
Yeah.
Just wrap it around. Put a couple little like thumbtacks to hold it, and then you break that cycle for about 3 weeks, and the sapsuckers have now gone maybe to your neighbor's property instead of yours.
I'm going to throw this to Greg, who is our resident on this show, bird expert. This time of year, the woodpeckers and the sapsuckers, they're looking for a little hey-hey. And so a lot of times, they'll be banging on hard, loud objects.
Absolutely.
Is it possible this is not an infestation, but it's just the,
So sapsuckers do specifically pick trees, and they make these what are called galleries, these rows of holes. And I believe generally they're doing that to attract insects.
The loudest sound they can make, basically.
They're not going for sound, these sapsuckers, though.
Oh, okay.
There's concentric line of holes. Yeah. Sometimes people think it's borers.
All woodpeckers will do try to make some kind of announcement.
Yes. But is it too late in the season for that now?
Still happening. Sapsuckers, you will really like this, Ray.
No, really?
It's syncopated.
Really?
It's thunk, thunk, thunk.
Do that again. You're like Art Blakey. That's great. Good job.
As opposed to hairy woodpeckers, which are so fast, you can't actually count them.
Yeah. And
then downy woodpeckers, a little slower. Red.
Sometimes they'll hit the metal.
Red-bellied woodpeckers.
Siding and stuff.
People will report, they're banging into the metal siding. There's no insects in that.
No, but that's a nice big sound.
Yeah.
And
resonant.
2 seconds on the tree. There. If the tree is small caliper, if it is 4 inches, 5 inches, that is a problem, and you definitely want to stop them because they will do too much damage.
Okay.
If the tree is big, it's 10, 12 inches, you can find lots of trees out there where this happened, and they're perfectly fine.
Okay.
And in this particular, for certain species, you'll see it on like mountain ash. I don't think I've ever seen a mountain ash without sapsucker damage.
Or birch or young willow.
Birch for sure.
Those can be problems.
Definitely willow, and definitely what Greg said, if it's small, put some fencing around to protect it.
All right, now, people, we're done, so we can stop talking. Dale Isla Riggs, how do people find out about the Berry Patch?
TheBerryPatch.net or our Facebook page, The Berry Patch, Steventown, New York.
Mr. Breglia, the Landis Arboretum, where the plant sale is about to happen.
It's 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and you can find more info on our website, LandisArboretum.org.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yes, 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, WardsNursery.com, anniversary celebration.
May you celebrate another 68 years.
Oh, That'd be nice.
He'll be pretty darn old. Bob, Fatigan's Nursery.
Fatigan's Nursery, 1140 Troy Schenectady Road in Latham, 2.5 miles west of the Northway.
Hey, thank you all for being here. We'll see you in 2 weeks. So if you didn't get your question in, this crew will be back 2 weeks from today. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York, the Rua family hosting tourists to Tuscany, focused on hospitality, food, and wine. RUATours.com for details. At Capital Region Classical at the Darrow School, 5 summer chamber music concerts in a historic Shaker Tannery in the foothills of the Berkshires, Saturdays, June through September, CapitalRegionClassical.org. Thanks again to Fred, Bob, Greg, and Dale Isla. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. Susie Check, I screened the calls. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Now this is in my wheelhouse. It's vegetarian food with Wendy Grossman. We'll both learn some stuff. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.